The search for solutions to the problem of homelessness continues, and as parties explore a variety of solutions, they can agree on one thing: there's no single answer. We had an extended discussion yesterday of the Honolulu City Council's efforts to expand the so-called sit-lie ban, Hawaii County's pilot safe zones project, and the difficulty of getting an accurate assessment of the homeless population, a discussion in which several listeners called in to take part. Scott Morishige, the state's homeless coordinator, joins us this morning to review some of the highlights of that discussion and give us the state's perspective. And Scott, we definitely didn't want to have this discussion without you taking part in it. You weren't able to be with us yesterday, but it was you can probably expect it was a pretty lively discussion, yeah?
Yeah, no, and thank you for the opportunity to join you, Chris. I appreciate it.
Well, sure, sure. And I assume you agree with what I said, but there's no one solution, right?
Oh, yes. No, I mean, homelessness is such a complex issue. There's no one answer. And you're dealing with many different, populations of people who fall into homelessness for many different reasons.
Yeah.
So it's something that didn't develop overnight to get to the point where we are, and it's something that's not going to be solved overnight either.
Well, let's look at where we are today from the state's perspective. Do you have an idea, like a ballpark idea of the state's population, for example?
So, according to the most recent homeless point-in-time count, the 2017 point-in-time count that was done in January, mm-hmm. there's about 7,200 homeless individuals statewide. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a reduction from where we were in the prior year in 2016. And I think one of the things that's important to note is that we actually saw the first statewide decrease in homelessness, a decrease of 9%, first decrease we've seen in 8 years. So I think we have to acknowledge that there has been some progress in reducing the number of people who are experiencing homelessness throughout the state of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I think with that being said, one thing that we've seen when we look at the data is although the overall numbers of homeless individuals are going down, we're seeing an increase in people who are unsheltered homeless. So people not staying in shelter but who are homeless, actually living literally out of doors.
Under a tree and, on a park
yeah,
bench.
Or... and that number has been going up. So I think we need to figure out why that's occurring
yeah.
and how we can really work with the resources we have to target that situation, because I think that's something people can see not only in the data, but when you look around us in our community, we do see people living in encampments, and that's not acceptable. So we need to figure out how we can work with our resources to address that situation and get people off the streets to a place of long-term stability.
Scott, you were telling me about some of the conditions you found. For example, tell me about what's happening under Nimitz Viaduct in Honolulu.
So under the Nimitz Viaduct, the Department of Transportation is going to do a cleanup of that area starting next week, Monday the 23rd.
A sweep.
Yeah, yes. So we went with outreach providers yesterday, and we're going to be going out to the remainder of this week to give notification and connect people to services in that area. But you have people living in situations that are really unsafe. There are a number of people living on the water in the Moanalua Stream, on houseboats. You have people who are living in the rafters of the viaduct. There was a fire that occurred in the area as recently as Friday. There's reasons why certain areas on government property are closed to all members of the public.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something specifically targeting homeless individuals. These areas are closed off to the public for health and safety reasons just in general. And government does have an obligation to respond when people are in situations that are dangerous. When we go out, we always partner with social service providers, with outreach agencies, so we can link people who are without homes, without a place to stay, to shelter services and long-term support. That's always our goal.
I'm trying to imagine, living in rafters under the viaduct, that the sanitation has got to be almost non-existent.
Yeah, it's, there are situations there where you have people living right next to large piles of trash.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't necessarily toilet or other sanitation facilities
in
that
rats,
area.
Right?
I'm sure there are. I've encountered, rats that are very large in some of the encampments that we've gone to in
yeah.
the past. And when you think these are conditions that people are sleeping in,
yeah.
right? So when we go out, what we're trying to do is build a relationship with the people who are there, let them know that some of the circumstances with our state shelters and other programs have changed, where the state and the city and county have begun to work really hard to lower the barriers to entry. For example, in the past, someone wanting to go to an emergency shelter, you had to have a picture ID to get in. That's no longer a requirement for most of the shelters. There were other things that served as barriers, and we're working through our state contracts to try and address that and make our shelters more accessible for people to come in more easily.
I want to play a soundbite from a caller yesterday. This is Mark from the North Shore, who I believe this is the man who had worked in San Francisco on the homeless issue. Let's just hear what he had to say.
I have not heard one single caller talk about the cause of homelessness. And what we learned in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'll be very brief here, we divided the problem into three categories. Category one, identification of people who truly do not want to be homeless. Maybe they're working poor, et cetera. Pump resources into getting them off the streets and into housing. Category two, a truthful acknowledgement that some people you cannot save. And then category three, 75 to 80% of your resources need to go to cutting off the cancer. Stop trying to treat the cancer. How about identifying a cure? So in San Francisco, we did a comprehensive study, and we learned that the number one contributor, believe it or not, in the San Francisco Bay Area was the foster care system. Kids emancipated at age 18 had nowhere to go. They're kicked out on the streets. That was the number one feeder into homelessness in the Bay Area. So what do? We changed the whole foster care system so that kids have resources when they emancipate, and that greatly reduced the numbers going into homelessness.
Scott, are you finding that there are young kids coming out of the foster family environment?
I think that's one factor that we're seeing. Certainly, I think in Kakaaka Waterfront Park, there were youth, you know, young people who were living in the park. Some of them were runaways. Some of them who did have parents living in the park, but parents that were really not caring for them. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think the state has been working very hard on, though, through the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health, is to adopt a new way that we work with families, including foster youth in the system. We've adopted an approach called Ohana Nui, which means really addressing the extended family, not just focusing on child, but looking at their whole system of supports and trying to wrap services around the child. Recently, Department of Human Services also extended the age a child can receive support through age 21. So this is something I think the department is trying to target resources to address. But there's many other systemic causes of homelessness as well. One of the things that we know is many individuals who are living out of doors who are chronically homeless are people who are dealing with serious mental illness or addiction. And so one of the things the administration did work very hard with the legislature last session was to increase resources for those who have serious mental illness, so we can specifically target people who are unsheltered, bring resources to them.
Yeah.
Beginning in, I think, May of this year, Department of Health launched an intensive case management pilot in partnership with Queens Hospital and the Honolulu Police Department to target those individuals who have serious mental illness, who are frequently going through the emergency room or frequently being what they call MH1'd by HPD, being brought in to Queens for a psychiatric assessment, trying to target those individuals for very intensive case management services. And that, although that pilot project is fairly new, it seems to have had very positive results, at least in terms of reducing the level of recidivism for emergency room usage for that population.
And that was what the caller was referring to, that the candid acknowledgement that there are people who are just not almost beyond the reach of standard efforts to help them, right? Mm-hmm. Another caller, you mentioned Kaka'ako Waterfront Park, and let's hear what Michelle from Kaneohe said about that.
Kaka'ako Waterfront Park was the last straw for me. It's like surfers can't go there. People, families can't go there. The other situation over on King Street where Stadium Park is, that's another untenable situation. What I would love to see is not only safe zones, but I would like to see some vagrancy laws with some teeth where the city and county coordinate with the state instead of the city and county and state constantly fighting with each other and pointing fingers at each other.
What do you think about that? I mean, it seems to move in two different directions, her suggestion. Tougher laws, vagrancy laws, which can be accused of criminalizing homelessness, with safe zones, which sort of moves in a different direction, yeah?
Well, I think one thing, you know, she mentioned coordination or lack of coordination between the city and county and the state.
Yeah.
And one thing I did want to say is both the city and the state, we actually do coordinate pretty closely. When we receive calls from the public, a lot of times people, you know, don't know about jurisdiction or they don't care about jurisdiction. So we get calls that come in, sometimes are for city and county properties and vice versa. And I regularly talk to my counterpart, Mark Alexander, at the city and county. Mm-hmm. We share information. We collaborate, figure out how we can combine our resources together. I also think the caller brought up a good point about, you know, when situations start to impact public safety, again, I think government does have an obligation to respond.
Right.
And we need to provide our state agencies that manage parks or other public spaces, like Department of Transportation that manages the roadways, with the tools they need to address the situation. So, for example, Governor Ige, this past session, one of the things we did do is we worked with Department of Transportation to increase resources so the legislature was able to provide funding for them to address enforcement issues on state highways. Mm-hmm. So that we're able to respond to some encampments that were in really unsafe situations where they were literally overlooking the H1 freeway and at risk of falling into the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with them to increase level of funding for Department of Transportation. We also work with the legislature to close loopholes in our law that allows our state law enforcement to better address criminal trespass on state lands.
Yeah.
And as a result, in late July, Department of Transportation was able to start addressing some of these unsafe situations along the H1 corridor from Middle Street to Kahala and mm-hmm. along the Nimitz corridor from River Street to Sand Island. And there, it was estimated there were about 80 people living along those areas in late July. And we were able to connect over the past several months 62 of those people into shelter and housing, and also able to clear some of those situations where people were, again, literally above the roadway. But it takes dedicated commitment of resources and really giving the agencies that manage these properties the tools they need to do so. As we prepare for the 2018 legislative session, that's one of the things that we're discussing as well. How can we continue to provide the tools not only to the Department of Transportation, but to agencies like the Hawaii Community Development Authority that manages the Kaka'ako Parks,
yeah.
so they have the tools they need to keep these public spaces open and accessible for the public? Because they have an obligation to the whole community to keep these public spaces as public spaces.
Well, Scott, as that listener just said, for her, Kaka'ako District Park was the last straw. Let's, just for benefit of, you know, Neighbor Island listeners who might not mm-hmm. know, but let's review how that situation, what it is today and how it came about.
So one of the things people have to remember when you're looking at the Kaka'ako situation, if we've had a homeless population in Kaka'ako, I want to say for at least a decade, and I think it yeah. goes back to maybe about 11 years ago or so when Ala Moana Beach Park was actually closed down for mm-hmm. a period of time, and the homeless population who was residing there was pushed out of that area. And that was when you first started seeing homeless individuals in the Kaka'ako mm-hmm. area. Since then, there's been a pretty persistent encampment. I think 2 years ago, shortly before I started in my position with the state, that encampment in Kaka'ako Makai had reached proportions where it was 300-plus people, and it was very unsafe. HPD was responding on a pretty regular basis
yeah.
to assaults and different types of things in the area. You know, state and city and county coordinated together to get people, you know, connected from that area to shelter, to housing, and also to clear the situation that had developed. Unfortunately, some individuals did relocate to Kaka'ako Waterfront Park. And what led HCDA to have to close the park recently is there was just a high level of damage to the park. You have almost all of the lampposts were tampered with. You have live electrical wires exposed, yeah. browned out grass in many of the areas of the park, and there were multiple fires. So again, the park being closed is only it's temporary to allow HCDA to go in, assess the level of damage, and the goal is to bring back the parks online to the public as quickly as possible. But it was closed for health and safety reasons because the park is no longer a safe place due to the level of damage that resulted.
Roughly how many in that population are children?
So one of the things that we were very happy to be able to report is that when we went with outreach providers into Kaka'ako Waterfront Park the week prior to the park closure, we were able to get connected to shelter all the families with minor children in that park. Mm-hmm. So that was about 28 individuals altogether in those families, and we were able to connect them to shelter and housing. Since then, we've been able to connect about 40 people altogether from the Kaka'ako Waterfront Park mm-hmm. area to shelter and housing. I think there were four people that went directly into permanent housing through housing vouchers available from service providers.
You know, I'm sure, Scott, you get any number of opportunities to assess what's being done in other venues, other mm-hmm. states, other locations. I do want to bring in a soundbite from yesterday. Lance Niimi, a special assistant to mm-hmm. Hawaii Island, Mayor Harry Kim, talking about what they've done on the Kona side.
We had an airport, Kona Airport, where our homeless had built up a large number of camps and people. And people were asking us to restore the park so that the people could be using it again for their families and take them to the beach like they used to and have walks in the morning and feel safe.
What do you think of the whole safe zones idea, Scott?
One of the things is my office and the Hawaii Interagency Council on Homelessness, we're actually tasked by the legislature this past session through Act 212 to form a working group to look at the issue of safe zones. And we're really taking that mandate very seriously. So we actually had a working group meeting last week, Thursday, where we were able to get input from people in the community, including Lance and his staff at Hawaii County, and homeless individuals themselves to get their thoughts and get their feedback. One of the things that we're looking at is we have such a limited amount of resources to address homelessness in general, so we do need to look at costs. Mm-hmm. And one of the things for the encampment Camp Kikaha in Kona is the cost right now I think is estimated at a little over $21,000 per month. And when you break it down by the number of people who are staying there at any given time, that's about $800 to $900 a month per mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we do need to take into consideration. But we have also looked at other legal encampments across the country in places like Oregon or Seattle, for example, looking at Opportunity Village and Nicholsville, and those have a lower per person cost. So we're weighing all those different types of factors right now.
Any number of factors to be weighed in, right? Here's a quick quote from Senator Sparrow. He's the chair of the Housing Committee at the legislature, about the transient nature of homeless population.
The idea, of course, is to help these individuals. And we can't help them if they're roaming like nomads all over the island. Let's put them in one place where the resources are available and we could help them.
And that's obviously the rationale for safe zones of it. As I listened to that, I did wonder, from the perspective of a homeless person being discussed in terms of let's put them in one place. A lot of people are homeless for one reason or another because they don't want to be put anywhere by someone else, right?
Yeah, and I think when you look at the concept of a shelter, what an emergency shelter is, I think initially emergency shelters develop for the same purpose, right? So you have a designated place in the community where people can go to be connected to resources. Now we're having a situation where people experiencing homelessness in the community are saying that many of them have concern about going to shelter. You know, government, we're trying to work hard to lower those barriers to shelter entry. But I think because you have this population who are saying they're not going to go into shelter, now we've had this big push to establish legal encampments or safe zones. But the challenge is if people are reluctant to leave the area where they're staying to go to an emergency shelter, we have to consider, is there going to be that same type of reluctance to go to a safe zone or legal encampment that may be in a part of the island that's very far away or not convenient for them? So that that's something that the working group that's looking at this issue has to take into consideration as well.
Well, Scott, I really appreciate your being with us this morning. I don't think too many people envy you your job.
No, thank you for the opportunity. And if anyone ever wants to contact my office, we're always open to getting feedback from the public. You can call us at 586-0193, or you can email my office at any time at gov.homelessness@hawaii.gov.
Thanks very much for being with us, Scott. Scott Morishige serves as the governor's coordinator on homelessness and is the point person for homeless issues in state government.